of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 611. Jason Lingren is with me, and I have personally asked Owen Benjamin back because I wanted to speak with someone who had a kind of firsthand view of the insanity that goes on in our entertainment industry. We did cover Tavistock way back. I think we may have done the Frankfurt School, and those are eye-opening episodes. And as we move along here, I may grab a passage here and there from Daniel Estulin's Tavistock Institute book, which is about as well-written as it gets. And by the way, that is one of the very few texts that agrees with me that the population has been falling since at least the 70s. But I think it's on the reading list. It's a good read. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a very lovely good morning.
All right. Welcome back, Owen.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. Anyhow, let's just open with what we were talking about before we turned on the mics, because I couldn't believe it. Owen starts talking. And I'm all, wait a minute, are you telling me that Sigmund Freud's lineage still has a backstage pass? And he's all, yeah. So, I mean, lay it down. And you also informed me that Bernays's lineage is part ownership in Netflix.
Oh, yeah. For those of you that don't know, I've done stand-up comedy for a long time. And I've had Comedy Central specials and independent specials. And I did this one special called Huge Pianist, because I'm 6'8 and I play piano and I have the sense of humor of a sixth grader. And one of the bits was about how every pop song is the same. And I'm sure Jason and all you guys have been jamming tunes and you're like, wow, these are the chords, you know, like the chords for a lot of these songs. And so I would do bits about Timberland producing Beethoven and how that sounds and all this. And it got to the point where I would do a bit about how I wanted to be a pop. Like I want to be a number one hit single guy, not a comedian. And I would tell the crowd how to react to a song that doesn't exist. And I'd be like, when I say the title, like scream, like it's your favorite song. And then when I do the first line, like, it's like, you've been waiting all year to, these are $900 tickets and you've been waiting all year. And it's like funny and novel, but it works. And by the end, people are singing along and it feels like it's Freebird, because that's how the human mind works. And so I do this bit and people really liked it. I've done it in stadiums. I've done it in theaters and clubs and everywhere. And they were submitting the special to Netflix years ago. And Netflix at that time was picking up all kinds of stuff. And I had been the lead of a movie with Christina Ricci and Anne Margaret and Cedric the Entertainer on Netflix. So they, you know, I've worked with them before. And they just did not respond well to this special. And if you watch this special, it's a phenomenal special. And then that's before I got into more of the esoteric truther stuff. Like, I didn't even know what Tavistock was at the time. I was just this like kind of naive dude who just wanted to make people laugh. And I think they felt, I don't know this for sure, but it, looking back, it seems like they felt like I was mocking them, because Netflix is part owned by Edward Bernays, who wrote Crystallizing Public Opinion and the 4 out of 5 dentists agree to fluoridate your pineal gland, and that guy. And then the entertainment industry, looking back, is very, very socially engineered. And the amount of people that have to be in on it is so minimal that that's the one piece of the puzzle I think I can help with a lot of your listeners about how many people have to be in on it. And it's so few, you know, and I can explain how the competition exists to get your script or get, you know, get your thing picked up, and how at no point are you thinking about what kind of mind worms or thoughts and behaviors you're injecting into the population, you know?
So what I'm going to do is I'll cue you up. I'm going to read a piece from Estulin, but you said you actually met members at some gig you were on. And by the way, maybe I should preface this. You're persona non grata in Hollywood, right? I mean, you were lined up. You, just so people don't know, you were lined up to be like the next boy. If I remember correctly, your picture was even on the side of the Comedy Shop. They were queuing you up to be the guy in comedy, but you refused to play ball. So you are still persona non grata, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was, I'm painted on the wall at the Hollywood Improv. I've hosted award shows where I'm introducing DiCaprio and all that. And that is very hard to get to as a stand-up comic, especially from like a small town without any Hollywood connections. And so not only am I persona non grata, I mean, I didn't budge an inch on COVID or anything. And so I'm not allowed on Airbnb. I'm not allowed on PayPal. I was supposed to be the example of, because I don't have any scandals. I don't have skeletons. I'm a family guy. Like I was always the guy that I could open for Julio Iglesias or Creed. You know, it was like, people are like, dude, just put Owen. He gets along with everybody.
Wasn't there something to do with children?
Grandkids, yeah.
You refused to do something you were directed to do in regard with children, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yeah. It was the trans child endocrine disruptor thing was what really did it, because your manager or your agent will tell you what tweets to take down, you know, and a lot of times I didn't care. Like, I've always had a pattern type truth or mind. I mean, a real comedian has a truth or mind, but you know, I would just throw stuff out. And if people, like one time, the Ebola virus, I had a development deal with Disney at the time where they give you like $100,000 and you just have to write them a script over the course of a year. But later I realized that they just are buying you to not do other stuff. And so I pointed out that the Ebola virus looked like Mickey Mouse. And like, it had these two big ears. Like, if you look at it, it's like a joke. It looks exactly like Mickey Mouse. And my manager's like, hey, man, you know, like, Disney paid you this year. Can you, like, not, like, talk about how Ebola looks like Mickey Mouse? I'm like, okay.
Well, wait a minute. Who was your manager? How did you get a manager? Did you choose him to manage you, or was he assigned to you?
Well, it's like, this is how it works. In Hollywood, you're all competing for the top managers. That's the thing. It's not like somebody's like, oh, this is going to be your manager. It's like, oh, dude, I got a meeting with Prince Bada Young. I got a meeting with 360. I got a meet, you know, and you're like, oh, dude, that's my manager now. Because what a manager does is they put together the talent. It's called packaging talent for TV shows or movies. And
the real human resources.
Yeah, exactly. They get you meetings. They develop shows. And the guy who started CAA actually was like really liked what I did and liked my talent. And with Jim Henson's son, developed a show called Owen's World, where it was like these puppets were different characters and aspects of my personality. And we're developing that for a year. Like, the guy who started CAA, like the guy that, I mean, I could do a whole episode just on that guy, because he's so interesting. How CAA started as, you know, it's now the biggest talent agency in the world. And it started, there was like a huge tree in the center of it. It was like beautiful. It was like,
but you can't go through that door anymore.
No, but now it's a different door. And I think it affected this guy too. It's so funny. So there was this tree in the center of the office building. It was like exciting. And then they sold out. And now it literally looks like Mugatu's building from Zoolander. It's like, and like, everything's symbolism, and there's a bank in there, and it's insane. And I could just tell that this dude missed the old days. You know, it's like, money's never worth it. But yeah, so what happened with the child trans thing is this one guy that was an NPR host was like talking about his 5-year-old trans kid on Twitter. This is in 2017, 18-ish. And I'm just going off on the guy about how it's abuse, because the trans thing for kids, it like presupposes sexuality, because like, someone's behavior at 5 determining their quote unquote gender. I mean, you guys know all this, but just to explain my thought process is like, they're innocent. Like, they're like not sexual beings. So I associated that with like, you know, some really dark stuff. And I was calling that out about endo disruptors and how you can't go back from that. And how it's abusive. And it was like, bang. It was like I awoke the devil. It was like, I was getting texts from every comic I knew. And like, what did you do, man? What'd you do? And it was like, my agent, I was at CAA, agent said, couldn't work with me anymore. I had to cancel my college shows, UConn or UMass, one of those.
Hey, Owen, what years are we talking about here?
This is 2017, 2018. I can't remember exactly, but it was fast. Yeah, and I was getting 15, 20 grand a night at a college. And then I went to $20 an hour hauling brush with my brother. And I'd already made the decision to leave LA because we had just had a child, but I was still selling scripts. I just sold a book to a major publisher. I was, you know, I was like always seen as very talented in Hollywood because of my writing ability and producing ability and the music ability, not just the stand-up. And I'd just gotten off a sitcom and all this, and I wouldn't budge. And I think that was the moment when they were like, oh no, so, like a real one got in. You know, it was like, I don't hate humanity.
You hadn't been directed to do things that you weren't down with. That's really the straw that broke the camel back, as you called out the whole gender thing that's been going on.
Yeah, yeah. Because the way it works is they don't tell you what to do. They tell you what you can't do. And typically it's just weeding out people that have morality. And up until that point, looking back, I was fairly hedonistic. I was like really into going out and partying, and until I met my now wife, like, you know, women and just like being funny. But I never had a hatred for humanity or a hatred for the good, the true, the beautiful. Like, none of that. But it was just like, I was a permissive person. I was just like, who's anyone to tell anyone what to do? I had a really bad view of the Catholic Church growing up, and I thought that they were a bunch of hypocrites. And so I just was pretty punk about stuff. But when it crossed the line to children, it was like a curtain came down in my life. And I've never been motivated by money or fame or anything like that. And that's so hard for people to believe, but over time they do see that. They're like, oh yeah, like you aren't. It's like, I like making money. I like being successful, but I would never sacrifice myself artistically for any or morally for any amount of money. And it finally crossed that line where I was like, they're like saying that you can't work anymore and all this. And I just had a child. So I was in this vulnerable position, and I was like, I wasn't even tempted. I'm like, there is nothing you guys can say for me to sign off on that. Like, that's nuts. And so from there, I just rebuilt, and things are actually going awesome now. I have like 4 kids and we built our own platforms, but it was pretty wild.
So this must be what the whole Diddy nonsense that's everywhere, that if they can get you involved in that, well, I guess people probably didn't know they were getting filmed because they got you by the cojones after that. But if you will participate in that, then it's like you're saying, it's a way to weed out people who have any moral values left.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, that's why so many of the top guys in politics, entertainment, all that stuff, they seem so gross, is because they weed that out. They like want that. And there is a level where they almost want you to be untalented so that they can control you more, especially in the music industry with the amount of technology they have now, that they just want the most docile, controllable people.
Well, it's crazy. All the things that are coming out now, the people that may have actually lost their lives because they wouldn't go with the program, there's starting to be a count. Did you ever get the invite to go to whatever it is, the white pajama parties or whatever the hell it is?
Oh, no, that's the thing. I never would have been that guy. That's why it's almost funny how far along I got. And I was telling you guys this before the show, like I wanted to write a movie about a guy who accidentally joins the Illuminati called Electric Gary, where he just like has pink eye and he's rubbing his eye and they're like, oh yeah, he's in or whatever. Because I would just, like, for example, the gay agenda. Like, my dad sang opera and he was always seen as very kind of fruity in my hometown because I'm from like a very blue collar town. And so I was always very, very supportive of like gay people because I was just like, it was more of a defense of my dad. Like, my dad was just like how he would be, his sense of humor. Like, I used to do bits about how I was in the straight closet and I wanted to play catch with mom because my dad was so, you know, opera centered. And he was a speech professor from Northwestern and Oxford, and he's just very erudite. And so that was why, you know, and there's so many people in Hollywood where I'm sure they're pushing the gay agenda because they, you know, they want the world to be like uglier because they're told to do that or blah, blah, blah. Like, mine was genuine love. You know, I was like, I have a very, my personality likes to defend people that are picked on, that I don't like bullies. That doesn't mean I don't like it when guys can be hard on each other and be tough to like toughen each other up, but I don't like that cruelty. And I actually do, I'm very protective of that, of people. And so I think it was a misunderstanding where people were like, oh, he's into the agenda. And I'm like, no, I just don't like how people treat artistic, sensitive men. You know, I'm like, you guys are, and I'm huge. I'm like, I will beat you up. Like, you're not tough. But then I saw the big agenda, the population reduction agenda.
Which is the only reason they care about gender or gay, yeah, exactly, or trans. It's the only reason they're interested is to make fewer babies.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just ugly, and it's just subverted and breaks the family and breaks any type of unity. And so now I see all that, but I would like, my Hollywood career was a genuine truther career. Like I've been telling people that my cancellation was a love story. You know, it was about me and my wife and our kids and what is true and beautiful. And I call it being kicked out of hell. It's like, you're not allowed in hell anymore. You know,
well, you still get gigs, if I'm not mistaken, but you have to do it all, right? You have to book yourself, and you have to find a place. If I remember correctly, not too long ago, a place wouldn't let you even by yourself go. How often are you faced with, I don't know, if you're doing a club somewhere, whatever you've booked for yourself, how often are you faced with you're not coming in here?
Oh, every time. Like, I don't even do clubs anymore. I started doing, because it's funny what happens when you get persona non grata. First, the neocons pick you up and they're like, want you to just talk trash about the left and Hollywood and stuff. And so I do all that. And then I'd start seeing what's going on in like Gaza or something. And I'd make fun of that. And they'd be like, oh, you can't do that. You can't make fun of the moon landing and like Jewish people. And I'm like, dude, what part of truther do you guys not understand? You know? And so you just keep moving in this direction to the point where I wasn't allowed to rent a theater myself, pay for it myself, and sell my own tickets. They would literally say, you're not allowed. And I say they, and people, I totally understand if someone could say, you're paranoid, you just can't sell tickets, it's all in your head. No. And the cool thing about my story is that is tons of people witnessed it. So I had a whole documentary about it because I booked a tour where it wasn't even like I was getting booked. I would be like, here's $5,000 to rent your theater. I'll sell it out. And then they would still say, you're not allowed to perform here, because they'd get a call. From what I put together, it's about debt and insurance and stuff like that. So some leverage point on every theater. It's like all of them. It's crazy how this works. Can say, you know, this guy is not allowed there. He's full of hate or whatever. And then they would send materials like Wikipedia and all this. And then I would have to refund everyone's tickets. And they would do that over and over again. Because one of the ways they go at people is to financially cripple you, where it's like they want you on your knees begging, especially with kids and all that stuff. And so I just kept innovating. So I would, listeners would have me perform in their places of business. I performed Reluctant Warlord was the name of a special. I did that in a wood shop in Portland, like this giant warehouse. And I performed on the back of a truck in front of like hundreds and hundreds of people. And it was a blast. And then I perform in libraries because they can't ban you. It's First Amendment issue, but private can. It's actually very inverted. And it was exciting. And then our phrase was, no one's having more fun than us. A hill to grow on. Persistence is fertile. Like, we started being like, this is fun. Like, screw them. They can't stop us from laughing, having kids, growing food. It's like, they don't have any power. All they can do is influence us to choose something else. And that's when I saw the real power of this world is not an influence, because it almost reveals the whole trick where they have to get you to choose it, right? It's like fascinating where, you know, I started using the post office. People would buy tickets in the mail, right? And it's like, I started seeing how it all worked, because I was kicked off Patreon, kicked off YouTube, not even allowed to do a piano channel on YouTube. Like, I think there's an employee just to make sure I'm not on. And it's not because I'm quote unquote full of hate or anything. It's because I'm likable. It's because I can make the Jews laugh in New York and the gays laugh in San Fran and the Cubans laugh in Miami in the same week, and then do a UFC event and then perform for blue collar guys in Pennsylvania. And that is what they don't want.
Your messaging can't be controlled.
Exactly.
I mean, ultimately, exactly. That's really what they don't want. I mean, I know for a fact you walked away from huge money
yeah.
to do this. I couldn't do it. I don't know how people do. I mean, I really don't know how people do things that they really dislike when they're directed to do it. It's crazy to think about. But your community is actually large enough where you guys can create venues for you, right? I mean, you guys can create your own venues now.
Yeah, like we, the last special I did was called Must Be Nice, and it was said live from nowhere because we just got like a huge chunk of land in the middle of Missouri, and we have a festival there every year now, and it's awesome. And it's such a testament that they can't control space, like the space around, like they can't control the three-dimensional world. It's like, you know, the system of commerce, I learned that during COVID, where it was like commerce is how it was getting controlled, but the private isn't. And so, you know, I hire sheriffs for security. Locals grow food and we have our own food being sold there that is from the area. And there's, we built a play structure for kids and it's just epic. It just shows that you can't control the human spirit without consent, but it's a road to see, man. It's like, I see how people get tricked. It's like, it seems so futile. Because all the programming, it's like, how do you overtake Goliath? Like, how do you survive it? And it's just like every seed can grow with just sun and water and soil. I know I sound kind of hippy dippy with that, but it's so true. It's like, you can't stop. It's like we're in this perfectly balanced place and it just can't stop.
Well, I've been there and I can say it's really nice. It's kind of set back in the mountains and it's really idyllic, and I'm sure you guys have built it up since I've been there.
You went there, right, Jason?
Yeah, I went the first year to help run the sound, and it was really nice. I liked it.
So Bud the printer, I asked him to give me all of the transcripts printed. And by the way, thank you, Owen. I know that the Bears, I know that you personally have 5 boxes that weigh 50 pounds apiece, and I believe the Bear community has one in their library. So thank you for helping me keep that. That was the intention, to hopefully be able to keep the work alive. But Bud sent me the floor plan. It was the first time it was like a brochure that shows everything you have. And that community, that may be the difference, depending on what happens over this next year, may be the difference between making it and not making it so well. You guys are growing food. You guys are growing everything, basically. And so many people have pooled, like Bud the printer, he prints. And so I was able to contact him and get a reasonable deal on 5 50-pound boxes of transcripts. And not only that, he in turn sent some off to you. And I don't know what happened, but I know the other ones ended up in the library. But that community, it's going to end up being who you know, is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely.
If things get bad. Yeah.
And the culture of it. It's about, you know, like all your transcripts, we wanted physical copies because over the idea that the internet never forgets and all that is nonsense. It's like I've watched them scrub clean so much knowledge that, you know, people were forced to handwrite me letters. And now we have all the letters. We have thousands and thousands of letters and things that people have made. And
you kept all those in the library?
Yeah, everything. It's the real world. And people knit stuff and do metal work and Permi Bear and all these guys. It's like, it's actually been a blessing. And so that's the real future, I think, is about just the gratitude. Like we like to name years, and 2025 is the year of gratitude, because it's like when you're grateful, even for the obstacles, you see like the light through it. You see the way through it. And now I'm doing like the best comedy I've done. And it's because I get to live a real life. Cause now I see all the people that I used to work with. I mean, some of these guys are making $100 million a year now, like guys that I was, you know, we'd open for each other not that long ago. It was like they got bought during COVID. It was like, it's crazy. And I would not trade a second with these people. It's like, they can't even write a joke. They're not connected to the joy, you know. They're like I could.
They're messaging. They're controlled messaging centers, is what they are.
Yeah, and it's all based on betrayal. So what it is your God-given talent connects you to people, and then they trust you. They're like, oh, that feels good because it's like a blessing. So that means that I trust this guy, and then they just use that trust to sell like this horror, and that's why I don't even do commercials or any of this stuff, because I saw how that worked, where it's all gambling for kids and chemicals. You know, like the amount of gambling that is now being sold to people is insane. And gambling is a horrifying addiction. And all of these podcasts, like every one of them, it's like brought to you by DraftKings, promo code DEATH. You know, and you're like, dude, how much money do you need? Like you can't, it's one thing if you're selling like a healthy food or, you know, something cool, but like, I'm not against marketing, but it's like, they're literally marketing one of the most addictive, horrifying things to the youth. And I don't know how you like live like that. Like, that's why their kids don't respect them. That's why they don't feel joy. They're all on tons of pills so that they can get out of bed in the morning. You know, they live in these giant mansions, but it's like a grotesque Faustian thing. I mean, I'm sure there's a few of them that are happy, but in general, I know these guys and they're not having a good time. And so
I'm sitting in my living room and I can't even watch it.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. So I can't imagine trying to live under that wicked facade or whatever it's properly called. But I want to shift gears a little bit here while we've still got time in hour one. So at some point, you literally bumped into Sigmund Freud's lineage and they are still holding backstage passes. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because if you go back and check the episodes Jason wrote for Edward Bernays, I don't think you can find an individual, a single human being who changed our world more in negative ways than that. And he, of course, is the double nephew of Sigmund Freud. And of course, Sigmund Freud is a mind hacker.
Exactly.
I mean, let's just be honest, what the psychology was about, why anyone took an interest at the highest level. So they could hack your mind, but they tell us they literally still have a backstage pass by virtue of being related to the king mind hacker.
Yeah. And they have like hangouts and stuff. Dude, it's so funny. It's like, yeah, I was in London doing the O2 Arena with some other guys and I was opening for those guys. And backstage, it's just like, oh, this is Sigmund Freud's granddaughter. We're all going to go meet up tomorrow with like Willie Nelson and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, wait, Sigmund Freud. And then I'm like talking to her and I'm like, dude, you guys are like studying me.
It was, were they?
Well, I mean, so you got a dude in front of 60,000 people getting them to laugh on cue. So I'm like a benevolent, I get, apparently I'm like a benevolent social engineer. You know, it's like, how can I social engineer this crowd to like not fight in their marriage as much, laugh and, you know, lower their stress. You know, I'm like almost like a masseuse where I'm like, I'll find that spot of pride and shame and whatever, I'll hit it and then I'll release some tension. And so I am kind of like them in a sense, because I do think like, I always like to ask why, like, why do people do that? Like, how did people get trash bags on everyone in 2 weeks in COVID? Like, but I've always just done it the other way. Like, how can I get people to not fight? How can I get a man and a woman who love each other to not hate each other based on communication problems, right? That's like my soap opera music guy's bit. And so I'm a very high caliber social engineer, but for me, it's like the way I see good versus bad is my internal world what I'm projecting in my external world? Or is there like a marketed discrepancy? And that deception is what I consider manipulation versus I'm here to make you laugh and relieve stress versus like presenting that you're doing that, but really you're trying to humiliate people into a docile, compliant blob, you know? And so someone like me, they look at like, how are you doing it? You know? And it's like, it was just such a interesting turn of events in my life.
It's just odd that granddaughter would even be there to me.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
It's just odd. It sounds odd.
Yeah. And they're related to the Netflix guys. Bernays and Freud are like very closely related genetically, like to a creepy degree.
Freud and Bernays. So Bernays is the double nephew of Freud. Yeah. But I think Jason just looked up the name of the Bernays connection as part owner in Netflix. Didn't you, Jason?
Yeah. Mark Bernays Randolph.
All these guys, it's all social engineering. Like you can look at Netflix. Like, so what are they trying to get people to do? You know?
So let's shift gears. So people, this is why it's a big deal. And this is why our entertainment systems are basically the enemy. And this is why I asked Owen on, because I know for a fact he walked away from fat paychecks because he wasn't willing. I also know he's controversial. I also know he pisses a lot of people off, but I don't care. I think that the community that's been built there may well end up being a life raft for many of the people associated if it gets bad. People don't seem to be able to put together why Trump and Elon are in each other's pockets.
Yeah.
Old McElon had a farm, AIAIO. This is going to fast track the digital world, the digital money. And by the way, for those who maybe are not aware, when you go on X, there's an AI service called Grok. Grok is an ancient demon.
Really?
If you try to look it up online, you'll be directed to some popular game, you know, like kids gaming, where Grok is, I think, a demon in that game, but they've used that game, as they do so often, to take all the search returns. Whoa. I haven't been able to get around it, but I know for a fact that Grok is a demon, and I know for a, well, I don't think I can say that yet, but I will. But if you go to a gematria calculator and put in the word Grok, G-R-O-K, then the word demon, it's the same value. And whenever that happens, you know there's at least a resonance, if not more. But the difference in the two is one letter where the numbers value to 12, if I remember correctly. But if you remember, what's the name of the movie, Jason, that I can never remember? Forbidden Planet. Remember Forbidden Planet with Walter Pidgeon? In it, they go to this planet where these Krell, an ancient race from like 20,000 millennia ago, perished, but they left their tech. And these machines for something like 20,000 millennia had been running and repairing themselves. This was the first big budget sci-fi movie put, I think it was put out by Disney. I hope I get all this right. I'm getting most of it right. I didn't know I was going to talk about it. But anyhow, Walter Pidgeon, the main character, is using their brain booster. This is all AI, by the way. And this is all written in the 50s. And the brain booster from the Krell can kill human beings because their brain capacity isn't enough. But he managed to safely get his brain boosted. But the AI uses his mind to create these demons, which are then unleashed on the planet, and they go kill people. You remember the movie, Jason. Would you add anything to that? Do you remember the movie, the plot and all of it?
Only vaguely. I saw it once a very long time ago, and it was very well done. The thing that always sticks out to me is a very straight playing Leslie Nielsen, because he went on to be such a comedian.
Right. Yep. Leslie Nielsen is there. But anyhow, I think it might be one of the first big budget sci-fis. But it's a good movie. But what you're missing is that is AI they are illustrating. And the race that built it was destroyed by it. And the AI is still functioning, and it's using human consciousness to create demons that it then sends out on the planet to do damage to people. But anyhow, I got sidetracked.
And it was very creepy, too, by the way, which was weird for a 50s film like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But nobody put together, I didn't even put together till recently, that that's AI. Of course it's AI. It has to be AI. Those are self-repairing machines. 20,000 millennia, the machine's been running and fixing themselves. And you just have to go watch the movie. But I'm going to pull a passage from the Tavistock Institute by Daniel Estulin. The subtitle is Social Engineering the Masses. I'm going to pull from page 161. This tells you how the Tavistock Institute gets their programming into a script when it's been accepted for production. Once they come up with the ideas, they pass it on to another group of infantile jerks called scriptwriters, who will put these ideas into simple dialogues full of nouns and simple verbs. The product will then be placed in the hands of the producers and directors for actual production. This is done the world over, from the United States to Canada and Western Europe. Even thousand-year-old Oriental cultures such as Japan have their own versions, and all major and minor U.S. hit situation comedies are all adapted to their own markets and their culture. Once the shows are designed and the scripts written, the actual brainwashing messages are inserted after the fact. The jerky screenwriters and brainstormers rely on, in quotes, experts from Tavistock and the Frankfurt School who work as advisors on most programs. For example, there can be no discussion of homosexuals without first deferring to the Gay Rights Task Force, who makes sure that the issue is being dealt with sensitively. Similarly, all children's shows, and that includes Disney programming, employ child psychiatrists who help shape the content. Furthermore, the entire environmental idiocracy is scripted into television, films, and into news. And I'll push this just slightly further because there's a real world example. And by the way, the publishing date on this book is
probably close to 20 years ago at this point.
It was reissued in 2015. I don't have the original print date, but anyhow, I'm going to run this forward with the real life example. And Owen can kind of comment because he may have recognized these dudes on sets. Take, for example, the 2008 Hollywood science fiction thriller, The Happening, starring Mark Wahlberg, that follows a man, his wife, and his best friend, along with his friend's daughter, as they try to escape from an inexplicable natural disaster. The plot revolves around a mysterious neurotoxin that causes anyone exposed to it to commit suicide. The message is easily discernible. People are the enemy of nature, and the planet is rebelling against us, ruthlessly killing the enemy. And it does go on from there. But I wanted to make the point, because I think a lot of people are still of a mind that if you pick the right entertainment, it's harmless. And I'm here to tell you it's not. The reason for entertainment at this point is because it's an echo chamber with a message, and people love it. And so it's even all the more effective. But have you ever detected these guys that were just described?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, it's as you were just talking, it's so fascinating how cunning these guys are, because I think one of the main things that they face for social engineering is competition. And so how do you root out competition is you don't let people know how they do it. You know, it's like, like, imagine if it was all Tavistock Frankfurt just writing every script and that was it. People would be like, no, I'm going to write one. I'm going to do a different one. I have an idea for something. We'll go do it. So the way they do it is they have this funneling system where I was one of the dupes. You know, I'm one of the useful idiots that you think that you're the writer, where you're like, you're submitting scripts, your agents, your managers, everybody's competing. There's money getting thrown around, all that. The top writers in the world are all competing. So you think that's where it is. And then as they're doing that, they're selecting what goes with the messaging. You know, if you, like, let's say you wanted to do a show about like a pandemic coming for 2020 and you want to have that. So you would send out a call to all the managers and agents, like, we're looking scripts this year. We're looking for an outbreak type virus script or something. And you'll get 100 submissions. You pick 30 that are going with your theme. You give some notes and you're just shaping it so that these people think they're writing it. Then once you sell this script, that's when you get consultants, executive producers, you know, script supervisors, all this stuff. And those guys are the ones that just give notes. And by that time, you're so groomed that you're so like happy you got your script made that the notes, you're like, oh, I can do that. That's cool. I can say grassy knoll 8 times for no reason, right? It's like that's how it works. And the key is to not let the producer type people, like someone like me, like an artist or something, know. Because as soon as you know, it would be dead. Because then you'd say, we have to make an alternative. Like, imagine if they were just upfront, you know, Twitter is here to mine your data for AI, and like people wouldn't use it. Facebook, all this stuff. It was supposed to be like, this is how you connect with your friends and family. They can't say what it is. And so Hollywood's no different. It just has a lot of money and attractive people and beaches, but it's still the same kind of shell game where you're not like told. I think there's a level where they know. And I know people that I now think know how it works, but so many don't. Like, you can be fairly successful and have no idea. In fact, the more shallow and materialistic and flesh oriented you are, the better for them, because you don't even care. Like, you don't even look at like any of those details, because you just want more money for another house in Aspen so that you can, you know, it's like, it's fascinating how it works.
Do you have any examples you could give where things you were involved with got changed and you were obviously consciously aware of it?
I wasn't conscious of social engineering at the time, but yeah, I can think of a million ideas of where they would say, all right, our call this year is for mixed families or families with dysfunction or something.
Already setting the highest perimeter, the boundary of the messaging, just to point it out. Just what you described, exactly. Parameter. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why it's like, man, I got a theory. I can throw this out. It's kind of like how, you know, with some of these events, they don't like to use real people, because I think it creates real martyrs and real energy and real moms looking to what happened to their kid. You know what I mean? I think it's kind of like the reverse in Hollywood, where they want a real writer to put their name on it so that they get the karmic blowback, or they're the ones that take the pride and take the accolades so that it doesn't go to the group that's writing it.
Plus they become a fall guy potentially.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like where someone's like, yeah, I wrote that. That's mine. I created that. I wrote that. Like, I've been that guy. I've totally been that bragging idiot that's like bragging about writing something. And then when I look back, it's like, why am I doing that? Like, I'm the guy that put that in. And I think I got to keep my integrity and my soul intact is because I wasn't going against what I thought was good. You know, where it's like I remember notes where it's like more alcohol, or like, everybody should be holding a beer, like stuff like that, like little things that now that I have kids and now that I don't drink, I'm like, that's weird, you know? And it's like, I'm not even super against drinking. I'm just like, when you have four kids, 8 and under, running around a farm, like dad can't have a buzz if you have to go to the hospital, you know? And so I'm just looking back, I'm like, why does everybody want everyone drunk all the time? You know, it's like,
well, look at all the, almost every movie from the 50s, they pour a hard alcohol drink every door they walk through.
Exactly.
And light a cigarette. And that ties to the Bernays programming, because there was a cultural stereotype where women didn't smoke in this country early on. And Bernays broke that and made it okay for women to smoke. But when you go back to those 50s golden era movies, you watch how many hard alcohol spirits get poured, and you watch how many cigarettes get lit. And these were people that were worshipped. But let me take this a step further, and I'll read one more shot from Daniel Estlin. Here we go. So those who protest, and everyone will remember this tactic from Covidius Minimus, right? All of us who were thrown out of places or belittled because we didn't want to breathe our exhaust fumes or whatever it may have been. Those who protest and are opposed to such idiocracy are shunned and scorned by their coworkers, friends, and family. If you weren't completely won over, you became tolerant, or even at very least, you kept your mouth shut as a lonely choice of reason. Isn't that right? The New York Hollywood social community of creative people function in what brainwashers call a leaderless group. They are unaware of the real outside forces that control them, as Owen was just saying, especially unaware of their own brainwashing by the 30 to 40 years of television viewing. Earlier in this chapter, he points out that the people that he calls the jerks, the 30, 40 somethings, they're all people who have had an entire lifetime grown up on TV by design. Anyhow, they believe themselves free to create, but they can lawfully only produce banalities. Ultimately, these creators of our television programming turn to their own brainwashing experience and values for their creative inspiration. When one producer was asked how he determined what was in his shows, he replied, "I think of myself as the audience. If it pleases me, I always think that it's going to please the audience. Indeed, it does." How many people who watch television are aware that what they see on the boob tube reflects the morals and conscience of the people who make that happen. And the last thing I will add is people typically forget that when you see a stage, every single thing in your view was put in your view and allowed to be in your view, which is why we have a backstage and scrims and curtains. When I was a stagehand, this came into focus for me when I began to realize that the people out front are only allowed to see what they are allowed to see. And the reason that is true is because it builds the excitement and the illusion. Anyhow, there's all that.
Dude, that's right. That's right on the money. Yeah, it's like a swarm is how I would describe it, where the leaderless group. Tolstoy wrote this book called A Confession, and it's crazy how similar late 19th century Russian intelligentsia is to how it is now, where it's like they're just writing for the sake of it and their vanity and their blah, blah, blah. And it's reflecting their internal world, and you're just watching that and it's being imposed on you. And it's funny though, when they make these tools, the tools can be used in either direction. And that's why Rockefeller said competition's the only sin, because it's like any alternative breaks binaries. And that's, I mean, I'm now realizing that that's why I'm so hated by them. Cause I used to try and be like, am I not explaining myself properly? Like kind of like what you were saying earlier, where I'm controversial or I've said things that like bother people. But if anyone really sits down and thinks about what it is that's so bothersome, it's really kind of an illusion, especially in the context of comedy and what people joke about and what the purpose of comedy is. What it is breaking the binary of what you're supposed to fight about is like the worst thing for them. They need Coke or Pepsi.
Even that, Owen, even what you just said has been reformed. When was the first time in your lifetime where all of a sudden you realized that comedians can't tell jokes right now?
It was Caitlyn Jenner. Yeah.
For me, the first time I ever noticed that was 9/11. And I started thinking, wow. and then it was like, I think it was Saturday Night Live. I think at some point comes back and announces on the air some ridiculous amount of time later, we can tell jokes again. So the control mechanism was so broad as to even control the platform, the idea that, I mean, lock, stock and barrel, all of it. And when I thought about 9/11 and we weren't allowed to laugh, that's recurred a bunch of times now because they're fast tracking and they've got their boys. They've got Trump and they've got Elon. This is the freaking dream team, the dream team to implement what they're going to do next, even though people can't seem to figure out in their limited view who puts them there and why they're there. They're getting ready to fast track the big move here. The move to AI.
Yeah. And the good news is, though, I think idol worship is at an all-time low. But yeah, I see what, you know, they have all their pieces in place. But it's like, I think pragmatism has really risen where people aren't, I don't know, maybe it's the people I hang with, but I live in North Idaho and I don't know anyone worshiping Trump like they once did, where it's like that whole emotional tether to some of these people, I don't see like I used to see. And that's I like that because idols are pretty much how the stage is set and how everything happens. And that's why I don't mind when people tear down people in entertainment, myself included. Like unless someone's trying to make it so I can't make a living or like I can't do my job, I don't mind when people mock me or make fun of me because I don't, when people give me those eyes like that I'm more special than I am, that's like the most dangerous place to be in. And so like ripping apart politicians and celebrities and anybody in the public eye is good in my opinion, because if they react, if the demon gets let out, that's a problem. And that's actually the main purpose of a comic. You know, I heard a stream you guys did a while ago about something about the African Bushmen or something and how they would make fun of each other, where they would like go at each other to kind of break the ego.
If the guy bragged too much about how good a hunter he was.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And I was doing a stream recently about how it's different for men and women, where it's like, I don't just like rip on women because women are just have a different internal world. It doesn't like help them, you know, but with men, when you get big for your britches or you start being pompous or you think you're special, not in like the special way that we all have souls, but you know what I mean? It's like to kind of break that is good because otherwise that's when you get 2016, the warp speed Trump, where people are looking at him and drawing like images like he's Jesus, like that's a problem. And that's one thing I think America has going for it is we have this like natural, you know, attacking of the government, which is good. Not like violent, but just like they all suck. Like just to have that feeling of constantly, like I just rip on Robert Kennedy and people because they were trying to like build him as this idol. And I'm like making fun of his voice and his bird and everything. And they're like, how dare you? I'm like, guys, he's a politician. Like they all suck. Like you have to remember that.
That attitude used to be different, you know, 30, 40 years ago when comedians went at politician, but we're coming up on top of the first hour. And I'll say one more thing. There is a short window to try to fend off in some meaningful way what's about to happen. Starting this year, 2025, a man who's now in the hip pocket of the president, who has both sides of the House, the Supreme Court, and Lord knows how many billionaires greasing his skids, whichever way he chooses to go, bought Twitter, renamed it X, and then employed AI that's named after a demon. That demon is being fed every keystroke from every social media platform, every book, every written, every song, every sentence, anything ever recorded digitally or otherwise. That AI is raping the intellectual property of planet Earth. And it's wrong. And that window for us to say that is our intellectual property is going to be a very short window. Though if you ask me now, I think we're going to have to contend with this either way. But what we're going to do here, Owen, is we're going to take a short break. We're going to take 5 or 10 minutes to use the restroom, grab a coffee, whatever. And we're going to come back for hour two. Do you want to give any links or anything like that?
Yeah, if anybody wants to check out our social media app, it's app.beartariatimes.com, that B-E-A-R times.com. If you go to the app, it's $15 for the whole year. So we want to make it, and it's a week free if you like it, but it's clean. It's like there's no
data collection.
No, none of that. It's literally just like it, there's no outside funding. There's no debt. There's no data collection. There's none of that stuff. It's literally just people meeting each other, starting businesses, families, posting what they're growing. It's just all, it's what I thought social media should be like, because the whole very depressing, scary, look, a cute panda, blah, 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 like that. It's like alchemy what they're doing. They're getting your emotions so riled up that you're docile. And so we don't have that on there. It's just, you scroll it and you feel good. You feel like people are doing good things in the world. And so if you're looking for that, like a place without that cortisol dump, that's what we got. And then all my streams are at unauthorized.tv. And then I post on Telegram and Why Didn't They Laugh on iTunes. But I've been banned from iTunes so many times that unauthorized is the spot. That's our own platform. And then owenbenjamin.com for the new special that was shot in the fields of Missouri. Oh, and BertariaCampgrounds.com if anyone wants to check that out. I think you're right on the money with the window. And as far as just claiming your territory and not submitting to the comforts of these people, you know, because that's how they're really going to get people is fear and comfort. And so they don't have any real world power. They don't have any divine power. They just have influence. And so the stronger we are and the better we build our culture and our communities, the better off we'll be.
There's an Overton window with convenience on one side and security on the other. And the closer you go to convenience, the further you get away from security in this world. And by the way, for years now, I have refused to open up social media or anything else in my given corporate name. And I have refused to use AI of any kind. There's a reason for that. Go look at the movie Forbidden Planet. There's a demon on X right now, named after a demon, and it is the AI. And the only reference that I can immediately provide, because I haven't been looking at it for that long, is the movie The Forbidden Planet, you may want to rethink using AI. Besides the fact that it's robbing the intellectual property from every culture of this world that has ever been existed and recorded. Jason, you want to add anything before we wrap up and take a short break?
When we get into hour two, Owen, I'd like to actually hear about how your comedy has changed from what you used to do years ago before you started to open your eyes to things and how you do it now, because it's safe to say you reach a different kind of audience now, right?
Yeah. I would love to talk about that and how I always want to go at the sacred cows of my audience, even when it changes, even when I'm not exposed to as many people. I think that that's a very important thing for a comedian to do. And as my audience got more Christian or veterans or stuff like that, I knew that I had to make fun of those worlds too. And that's how I stay away from being what I consider a hack. And so we can talk about that stuff because that's what comedy needs to do. You're kind of like revealing those demons, and then there's a little bit of exorcism to it, but in a funny, like chill, non-religious way.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap up hour one. We're going to take a quick 5-minute break. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. They get access to all the forums, the comments sections. They can create all those things, the threads, the top level subjects, and they can stream the 2-hour film called Shoot the Moon anytime they like. Shoot the Moon has 10 awards in the world, and it covers all my past telescope work. It has all the lunar waves. And luckily, I decided to put the first discovery of the binary, the second sun, which I'm starting to accept is likely the binary, because almost every star in our system is a binary. But to get back to the point, that's in the footage. Also, people have been loving the solar images. I'm glad I did it. People asked for a long time. So the solar images are available to people. And I want to ask one more time, if you buy the solar images, please take a picture of it hung and send it in so I can start a gallery of all those. Like hundreds, more than 100, actually almost 200 images have been sold at this point. And I only have 2 images or 3 images. But with that, we're going to take a 5-minute break and we'll be back with Jason and Owen. And I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.